Hi, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balanchy. Thanks for being here with us. We are back in our comfortable studio here in the nation's capital area, Trump Land, if you will. You can get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Balanchy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, at Golf News Net. GolfNewsNet.com is where you can find all of our work and the updated GNN app with new and improved GNN radio stream, which doesn't go down anymore, and it isn't literally running out of my basement, which is great. And you can get most of our work as well on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog on sports.yahoo.com. So this week is our final podcast of the year, and after that we'll be shutting it down until 2017 when we get the Tournament of Champions to kind of bring us back into golf after a few weeks away. So first and foremost, ahead of everything else, I hope you have a wonderful end of the year, a great December, a great Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate, or if you celebrate nothing or Festivus, have a great one. And thank you so much for your support. It means the world to me. So on this week's show, we have a little bit of a treat, and it wasn't one that we were expecting last week when we broadcast from sunny, gorgeous, 82-degree West Palm Beach, Florida at the Hilton there for the TaylorMade event. But we got ourselves some time with John Rahm. And if you know John Rahm, you know a little bit of his backstory. He was the world number one amateur and came out as an amateur on the PGA Tour in a couple of events just before turning pro last year and lit it up. Was a top five guy in Phoenix, a top 10 at the OHL Classic in Mayakoba. And then he turns pro after a tremendous performance at the U.S. Open where he won the low amateur honors, and Diana Murphy from the USGA did like some weird cat call about John Rahm being like young meat or something like that. It was very bizarre, but very amusing. And so he turns pro. He goes and makes his first start at the Quicken Loans National, which does have a track record of inviting up-and-coming amateurs who are just about to turn pro or who have turned pro into the field. What's he do? He contends. He nearly wins. He basically locks up his PGA Tour card in four starts. He becomes the sixth guy in the history of the PGA Tour to get his PGA Tour card fresh out of college or fresh out of turning pro without having to go to Q school or now these days having to spend a year on the web.com tour. Very impressive. And so he was in West Palm as part of this event with TaylorMade along with Dustin Johnson. We're not cool enough yet to get Dustin Johnson for 15 minutes, but to be frank, I think we had a better conversation with John Rahm than we probably would have had with Dustin Johnson. So no worries there. The access was awesome. It was kind of part of a day where we, as media members, were testing the new equipment, hearing about it, kind of getting a little bit of a series of presentations about the irons and the balls, driver, fairway woods, hybrids, all the stuff that's coming out for the company in 2017, and then going to the range to hit a lot of it. And Rahm and Dustin Johnson were there demonstrating their prowess, smoking four irons 250, 260 yards, which is beyond my comprehension by about 30 yards at least, and showing off the new equipment and the new TP and TP5X, and TP5X golf ball that from the company that they're bringing out in March. They're seeding a couple hundred thousand dozen in the hands of golfers. They're really excited about it, and I played with it actually later in the week and had a great round with it. Really enjoyed it. Although Florida golf is weird, the ball doesn't fly as far as I would like to see it fly, so for whatever reason doesn't work with my game. So I'll try it out here at home as it gets a little bit colder and give you a little bit of a full report on the website. But after all this kind of day, you kind of go through stations, you talk to the guys behind the equipment, the designers, and then you hit it, and then you spend a little bit of time with a player, and in this case it was John Rahm, and you got 15 minutes of time with him, and just kind of went around and around and around, group after group after group, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes, keep going, 15, 20, 15, 30, whatever it is. And I showed up to Rahm, who, again, has been kind of on a show, doing a show for the better part of 5 hours at that point of the day, between the demo with Dustin Johnson and Charlie Reimer, and that just did not go with Charlie Reimer. That was a mistake. And then you walk over to him, and he's clearly tired. I mean, he's had a long day. And he looks at me, and I've got my recorder in hand, no video camera or anything like that. And he goes, "No video?" I said, "Yeah, it's just audio." He's like, "Oh, thank God." And it was kind of refreshing to hear a guy, again, he's in his early 20s, This is his first real big outing as part of the TaylorMade staff, as part of being a professional. Just did his first commercial shoot a few months ago. All of these things. It's a first-time experience for him. And I loved talking to John Robb. He was refreshing. He was interesting. He's not the kind of guy that sits there and labors over every answer, as you will hear from our conversation, which basically wasn't edited at all. I mean, he gave me an answer, and that was it. And there was no, like, take-backs. There was no, can you please stop? He just went with the flow. It was like two guys just having a conversation, like, while they were playing golf. Or on Twitter, for that matter. The guy was great. And so we're going to lead with him. It's about 15 minutes. We'll go through that with John, and then we'll come back with you.
All right, so this has been kind of a crazy, like, 6 months for you. You turn pro.
Kind of.
You come out of the gate. You're hot. Top fives, top tens, top 20s. So what has the run been like these last few months? And was it what you expected out of the gate?
You know, I always expect a lot of myself, but I never expected to get my tour card, which I assume is what you're talking about,
yeah.
So fast, right? You know, I showed up in Congressional thinking I got six tournaments to play the best I can to get my tour card. I really thought I was going to have to get to the last few, having to make the cut to get enough money, right?
Yeah.
And then right off the bat, I have a chance to win. Which I was really disappointed at that I didn't win. You know, I was playing that good, right?
Yeah.
And finish third and get, you know, half of the money I needed, and then go to Canada, finish tied for second, boom, done. I was like, what just happened? I remember the words from my manager. I was mad because I didn't make that putt on the 18 to go to a playoff, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to the airport like, hey, John, I just want to tell officially, we know you locked up your tour card. You can smile now. And in my mind, I was like, I'm not freaking smiling. I just didn't win. Shut up. Like, I'm here to win. I don't care about the tour card. I don't care if I don't get it. And then, you know, like a few days later, I'm like, God, I'm an idiot. I just got my tour card in four events. You know, there's only a few, you know, like five, six, seven
six,
players.
You're the sixth guy.
That get to do it just through monoliths without going through a Q school or stuff like that. So,
yeah.
You know, I was really proud of myself to be able to do that. It you know, lifted a huge weight on me, and I was able to play the last few events a little more relaxed and rest my mind a little bit, you know, right? Because I came through the college year of studying and golf and then finals and then nationals and Oakmont, which that is a huge weight on you. And then to like a month later, done. I was like, wow, that was really fast.
How much did the experience that you had as an amateur, you know, the T10 in Phoenix, was the T15 in Mayakoba last year, how much
T10, top 10 too, actually.
Oh, it was T10 also?
Top 5 and top 10, yeah.
Well, damn. All right, even better. Then how do those help you kind of coming out of the gate? Did it make you feel more comfortable? Did it change how you kind of viewed your start as a professional?
It was key. It's plain simple, it was key. To show up to Phoenix, you know, it's a special tournament for me, being an ASU guy, right? And play as good as I did. Even the last day, I was one over par through 9 holes and made my way back to 12 under to top 5. I was like, wow. You know, it was eye-opening. It made me realize I was better compared to the best in the world than I thought it was. So, you know, that was very, very great for me. And then, you know, after that, I played so much better golf just because I knew where I stood compared to the best in the world. And then, you know, I carried that on. Mayakoba, I got another top 10. And I got a lot of experience on those PGA Tour events that I play. I play in Travelers and made the cut too, although I didn't play good on the weekend. But, you know, coming out to Congressional, I knew what I was capable of. I had just finished top 23 on the US Open. A lot of those guys out there didn't even make the cut. So I was like, you know I belong here. I know I can do it. And I had just so much confidence in me that way. Then I showed up the first day, shoot 7 on there. And obviously, after playing Oakmont, Congressional seemed easy. And I was like, well, there's no rough. The greens are not nuts. This is easy, right? Every putt seems straight.
Yeah.
Even if you had a foot of break, it was straight compared to Oakmont. So, you know, I showed up very confident. So all what I did as an amateur, just leading up to that moment I had in Congressional, that moment of being pro for the first time, you know, started making a living out of it. And obviously, a lot of years of practice mentally getting ready paid off.
When you kind of realize you got your card, you know you've got your year set, did you start thinking about how you're going to try and make your schedule? And have you kind of talked to anybody about what events you might like best, or what are the ones that are best run?
That's exactly what I did. I was like, okay, it was time to start thinking, you know, what we do. Because Tiger's always been famous to being one of those who didn't play more than, what, like 20 events a year.
Right, yeah.
And he was always 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And you know, that's the reason why. Like, that guy was seriously in shape. If he's only playing two tournaments in a row, maybe I have to consider that, right? And then I realized, well, I have to play to my strengths. I've spent a lot of time on the West Coast just because of college, and I played on the West Coast the most, so maybe staying there, it would be the best for my golf. So trying to play as much as I can on the West Coast at first, I think is going to be the best. That's why I play Safeway, that's why I play Vegas, and that's probably when I'm going to play a lot on the West Coast swing. And then, well, on the East Coast, try to see what courses are going to be better for me. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there that know my game and know the courses are going to be able to help me out. But then there's also places that I want to go play. Obviously, Valspar Championship looks amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it suits me or not, but that place looks great. And Snake Pit, I just want to go play so as soon as I can. I know Palmer Invitational, if I can, it would be great.
Yeah.
And then I know I have invites to Memorial and Colonial just because of a award that I won last year. So,
right.
It would be amazing to be able to. It would be amazing. It would be great to be able to start shaping my schedule to hopefully, you know, start building the one that's gonna, how it's gonna look up in the future. But I really, really don't know yet. I feel like there'll be stretches where I'll play four, three tournaments in a row. I don't think I'll play more than three, and then you know, take a couple weeks off. It'll be cool to see how my body reacts. You know, Jordan
yeah.
Spieth is one of those who's gonna try to play less this year. So
right.
I feel like I'm one of those that rest. It's a big part of your practice. You know, you need to be rested. If you're not rested, your body's not going to react as well.
So are you more of a grinder type? You want to play like 3-4 in a row, or do you want to kind of do that 2-1-1 off type?
I like that 2-1-1 off. I think it's more effective than playing 4 in a row.
Yeah.
Unless it's towards the end of the year and you need the money and you need to play all of them. Otherwise, you know, even this year I did Safeway, then I did Vegas, Mayakoba. And I didn't play anything else, but I did play the World Cup in Australia, but that was a week in between. So
right.
I really, you know, I'm contemplating playing all of the ones on the West Coast. It would be 5 in a row, but one of them is Phoenix. And I literally have to drive about 2 minutes to get to the golf course. So that really counts as being home.
That's a home game, yeah.
Exactly. Like, I don't even need to go do practice rounds just because I live there and I can play the course early
yeah.
on. So, you know, I wouldn't count that. I still count it as 2-on, 1-off, 2-on.
Yeah.
Just because Phoenix is right, it's so close to home. But, you know, I feel like I'm gonna get ready for that early on in the year and probably take, you know, a good break after that if I end up doing that.
I'm sure someone has probably asked you about this already, thinking towards Ryder Cup in 18. You have to have European Tour membership. Where have you kind of come down on that so far?
I have it all planned out. Yeah, well, I know that it's once you get to the top 50 in the world, it makes it a lot easier, right? You play
yep.
the WGCs and the majors, so that's already 8 tournaments that count towards that. So all you have to do is play a few other events in the European Tour, and you get to the enough events, and probably if you play good, easily make enough money to get your European Tour card. But
yeah.
I know I want to play Spanish Open. Obviously, it's my Open, French Open, because the Ryder Cup is going to be in France, and you know, the Irish Open usually is a good one. And if I end up making the British Open or Scottish Open the week before, it's always great to do. So that will be 3 European Tour events I'll be playing besides the British Open, and I have to add 2 more. So you can always go one of those in Abu Dhabi or on the desert, anything like that. I really haven't looked too much into it because this year I wanted to focus on PGA Tour only just because I'm based out of here. And if I play good enough this year, maybe we'll look up to that next year. But it's something that's in the back of my mind. I want to play the Ryder Cup. I want to represent Europe in the Ryder Cup. I want to represent Spain in the Ryder Cup. And, you know, it'll be a really proud moment if I can make it. But, you know, just give it time. I know I'll get there. It's just I took a longer route to get there than... As short as it was to get to the PGA Tour, is going to be a little harder to get in the Ryder Cup.
Thomas Bjorn's going to be the captain in 18. Have you ever met him? Do you know anything about him personally, offhand? I mean,
well, I know he was one of the greatest in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, great player. He played the Ryder Cup in Glen Eagles.
Yeah.
You know, still a great competitive player. That was 2 years ago. So.
Yeah. Still got it.
Obviously, if I can, I'll try to convince him. Like, hey, you need to pick me. I've played in France before. It suits me. I'm a great foursome player. or fourball. I make a lot of birdies. Who knows? It's just, you know, if I could talk to him, obviously I would talk to him. But I'll try to let my golf game speak for itself.
How has working with TaylorMade been so far? And kind of what has the process been like to kind of get into their equipment? And then, you know, you've raved about the TP5, the X ball. So... how's that transition maybe going to take shape into next year?
You know, TaylorMade has some great guys working for them. The family of TaylorMade is really amazing. They're just the best at what they do, and they're great people. They sure made this journey so easy for us players. I mean, I remember when I first did my first fitting, Keith Sabarbro told me, hey, this should be easy. This should not be hard. And I'm like, well, that's weird. usually is hard to find a good driver, right? It's like, no, this should be easy.
Yeah.
It should be just find the right testing and it should be an easy transition, otherwise don't do it. He was right, it was pretty easy. Just pulled up that driver, hit two drives, and I'm like, all right, put it in the back. So it really made it great. And then talking about the ball, it really is, you know, expecting a lot out of that ball, especially for me switching from Tyler's to that. I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully it turns out. I'm gonna give it a try this Christmas. See if I can play as good as I do with probably 1X. See if my expectations are reached by the ball. Otherwise, if I'm not quite there yet when the tour comes around, I probably, you know, won't make such a drastic change in my game. You know, I'll try to be thorough and completely committed and sure that the ball can do what I want to do before I test it on the tournament.
For the average person, you could hand them literally any golf ball and they would notice the difference, but they probably wouldn't change their game that much. So can you explain for the average person how big of a difference it is for you to go from one ball to another?
Very simple. It's with the irons, it's about an average of 10 yards carry, including the wood to the driver too, right? So imagine a 400-yard par 4. Usually my average is 305 with the driver, so imagine I hit a 305. Now we have 95 yards to the green. So 95 yards would be a 3/4 56. Right. If you add up the distance that I gain, 10 yards more, it'll be 315, right? We have 85 yards to the green. In 85 yards, it's looking more towards a full 60, but with the new ball, it's probably gonna be more like a 3/4 60. So I'm gonna be closer to the green. I'm gonna be able to make shorter swings to get to the green. So that just gives you a lot more consistency and precision. And same in par fives. You know, even let's say 550-yard par five, right? If I'm hitting it a good one, hit it 320, with a new ball, right, it's 320.
Yeah.
That's probably going hard. I can get there. And we're talking about carry. We're not talking about roll yet.
Right.
So those few ones we've hit here, we flew with 315. So it's just 320 total, right? We have, what is it? That would be 250. It would be 230 to the green. Usually that will be easy 5 foot.
Mm-hmm.
But with this new ball, 4 iron. And 4 iron's getting there all day.
Yeah.
Easy. I can even go squeeze a 5 iron. So that's already a huge change.
Yeah.
It's, you know, added all up, it's about a 2 club difference going into the green. And obviously that's always a lot easier to hit it closer.
And you talked about your short game a little bit earlier, that you like to kind of play lower spin shots in a lot of cases. How does that testing work out going from, you know, a Pro V1X into this ball?
Well, so far what I've tried, it just performs the same way. It really doesn't make any difference. I really can't tell. If you don't put the name on the ball and you have a Titleist player use it, you probably won't even notice this when you're around the green.
Yeah.
Performs the same way. That's the feel I got. Obviously, I have to do a lot more testing, but I'm convinced that it won't be much difference.
And which of those two aspects is more important to you, putting that extra 10 yards on a driver or kind of maintaining that kind of control that you like?
You know, I for what I saw, I got the same control. I think the extra distance is always helpful, and then you can adjust your short game to it. But, you know, the less adjustment you have to do, the better, obviously. I think around the green, just I keep looking at the green here, it's going to be the same thing, honestly. Because those low spinners are not the shots from 50 yards that spin, just going to stop right on them. I'm talking about right next to the green that comes out low with some check on it. And I feel like that doesn't take much to do. I can probably do it almost with a practice ball. And, you know, if you give me a TP5X, it's still doable. I mean, it was very, very similar. There was not much difference at all.
You kind of grew up in the era where Tiger kind of hit the scene and was like, obviously still kind of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So is he among your golf heroes, or kind of who are the guys you most looked up to or most loved watching growing up playing golf?
I feel like if you're a golfer, it's impossible not to look up to Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be foolish not to look up to Tiger. I mean, arguably the greatest player of all time, you know, taking Jack and Tiger. It's just hard not to look at those guys. But my main reference has been Seve.
Yeah.
Seve Ballesteros. I mean, he grew up 1 hour west of where I'm from. Pretty similar environment. Well, I mean, not the way he started playing golf, but weather, course, type of golf that is played is very similar. So, you know, I grew up idolizing him. I still do, and I look up to try to emulate a lot of things that the way he did and the way he does. He used to do things. On and off the golf course, right? He was quite a character. He was very honest. You could feel his emotions on the golf course. And, you know, I'm not a guy who shuts off his emotions. I can't play golf that way. So I like to express myself. And he was the same way. And, you know, that's what a lot of people probably loved about him. He was such a genuine guy and such a show to watch. Obviously, the style of golf is a little different. I'm much straighter of the tee, luckily for me. But, you know, if I start hitting Crockett in wind tournaments like he did, I'll be happy about it, too.
Is there anybody that you've kind of run into so far, got your limited tour experience, that someone is going to give you a helping hand on kind of how to conduct yourself or how to do a schedule or, you know, just kind of that practical stuff that's not golf?
You know, since my manager is his brother, it'll be Phil Mickelson, it's a good one to ask questions to.
He
pretty much went through the same thing I did. He went 4 years to college and then turned pro and similar way that I did, right? So it's always a great person to ask. Very smart guy, always has great advice for me. You know, I don't like to ask him so much about golf and how to hit the golf ball because we have different ways of seeing the game, right?
Yeah.
He's very meticulous on everything he does. He thinks a lot about it. I don't think that much. But, you know, if I can have someone like him, which is one of the greatest that we have now, and he's still playing competitively on tour, it's definitely a great thing that I'll definitely do.
All right, last question. What is one golf course that you haven't played yet that is not on the PGA Tour that you want to play?
That's not. God, that's hard. I can say two.
Okay.
Three.
All right.
St. Andrews, because I've never played and I want to play. Pine Valley, Cypress Point.
Solid lineup?
Yeah, it's a great lineup. One of them is pretty easy. St. Andrews is a little, compared to the other two, it's a little easier to make it to. But those two will be amazing.
Awesome. Thanks for the time. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again to the folks at TaylorMade. Thank you to John Rahm for spending that time with us. He was wonderful, as I said. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I could have spent 45 minutes just talking to John Rahm about a variety of things, but really kind of wanted to hit on some high points about what he's accomplished so far as a professional, what he intends to do this year now that he's got his status and can find his way into other events and kind of future plans and then some stuff just to kind of get to know the guy as a human being. So I hope that kind of brought that out in that 15-minute period, and hopefully we can communicate with him a little bit more in the future. So thanks to everyone at TaylorMade for putting that together and putting together what I thought was an excellent event. I wanted to wrap up a little bit with the year here and just kind of think about a couple of things that were interesting kind of going into the off season. I guess the 2 week off season that we've got. First of all, I want to react a little bit to Phil Mickelson. He had a second sports hernia surgery. We don't know what the official date is, at least I don't. Last check last night, that may have been updated with some facts, but Phil Mickelson had a sports hernia surgery in mid-October, like October 19th, the day after, a couple days after finishing the Safeway Open, the first event of the PGA Tour season. I think he was tied for it. He had a good week. He had a good week. And so he basically did that to repair a strain or a tear in his kind of abdomen groin area. And he'd been dealing with it the whole year. It was kind of at his belly button, so it's kind of lower abdomen area. And he just kind of pushed it in. He couldn't quite train as much as he wanted, but he kind of worked through it, and now he's had a second procedure done, I guess, to kind of correct what wasn't properly done or what came undone the first time. So we don't know when Mickelson will make his 2017 debut. He has typically done it in recent years at the Career Builder Challenge in Palm Springs, the California desert. We don't know when that's going to happen now, when that debut will happen now. We don't know if he'll still make that. We doubt it at this point. When the surgery goes well, doctors say it's a 4 to 6 week recovery time. If you're looking at 6 weeks, that puts you at the end of January. That's probably not going to work out. If you're very aggressive and you get it in 4 weeks, then maybe you get it the middle of January and you've got a chance. So we'll see. But either way, Mickelson will be there. He's the ambassador/host of the event now, so that'll be pretty interesting. Tiger Woods is going to play in the Genesis Open, which was formerly the Northern Trust Open, formerly the Los Angeles Open, whatever it is. It's at Riviera. And Tiger's foundation now benefits, and his golf tournament management arm runs it. So that's excellent news. We have at least one sense of when Tiger Woods will play again. We will probably get an event or two in the intervening time, perhaps one in the Middle East. I would almost assume Torrey Pines would be a part of that as a little bit of a payback for the glutes activated tournament from 2015 where he bowed out. And I would expect him to be a part of that as well. So we've got an idea of a couple of events for Tiger Woods for early next year. I think that's good news too. If the Q school for the web.com tour is complete and Jim Renner won it, I think it was 52 guys altogether got status for next year. I am kind of bothered that Golf Channel doesn't telecast that like they used to. I mean, I know it's just for web.com tour status now. It's not for the PGA Tour. It's not quite as dramatic, but I would have much rather seen that than the PNC Father-Son Challenge. I'm sorry. I would rather see guys with their livelihoods on the line than hitting giggles like that, like the Shark Shootout. They're fine tournaments. They're well-run. They're entertaining for the people that are there and watching on TV, but they just don't mean the same thing to me. And the other thing I want to bring to your attention is the LPGA Tour today announced they are creating a senior LPGA championship for the first time in conjunction with their Legends Tour, which is kind of, sort of, not really affiliated with them. It's going to have, I think, a $600,000 purse, 81 players, no cut. The cool part is it runs Monday to Wednesday. So it's going to get 3 rounds of coverage on Golf Channel. It's a tournament that runs at French Lick Resort. So French Lick wins, the players win, the LPGA wins. It gives Golf Channel something to broadcast on Monday through Wednesday that isn't bad. And and it's something for us to watch Monday through Wednesday. Now, obviously, you're not going to get a ton of fans there because who can attend a golf tournament Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? But beyond that, that's great news. So I'm excited for that. I can't wait to see more of that. And we're going to see more golf tournaments end on Tuesdays and Wednesdays next year. And I'm very excited for that as a television viewer, as someone who sits at home and will will be watching television and going, oh, not another thing today, either about politics or the world. I mean, there are just so many depressing things happening. So to be able to turn those things out and turn on live good golf on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of a week, even if it's just 5 or 6 weeks a year, that's really going to make my year. So I'm grateful that that has become a development in our sport. So we'll get a couple of those opportunities in January with the Web.com Tour kicking off their year going Sunday to Wednesday, and then we'll get it with some NCAA events on Golf Channel. We'll get it with the Legends Tour event, and I think we'll have one more opportunity like that coming along. So that's great news altogether. So that's it for this week's show. Just want to kind of give you the John Rahm stuff and a couple of things to react to, and I hope you enjoy the conversation with Rahm. Go follow him on Twitter if you are on Twitter. He's a great follow, and it was a great conversation. So that wraps up the 19th Hole Golf Show for 2016. We will see you again in 2017. If something crazy happens, we might pop in with a podcast. In the meantime, we don't anticipate that happening. But otherwise, to you and your family, to anyone that you care about, I hope you have a great holiday. I hope you have a great rest of the year. Can't wait to talk golf again, meaningful golf again in January. And thanks so much for your support of Golf News Net and the 19th Hole Golf Show. We'll see you next year.